tragics. We're weekend packers, and we love that's the right. game of golf. And I think that's...
I showed you guys that on the weekend.
Yes, you did. We'll get to that shortly.
Alrighty, guys. Monday night special tonight with Golf Days Australia. Monday night live. Looking forward to tonight's episode, Steve.
Very much so, fella. Very, very much so. Just getting right into the spirit of it.
Yeah, we'll get started into it. We've got a few quick readouts to our sponsors as usual. So beer is provided tonight by sessionset.com. So obviously we've got a few different craft beers. I've got the Wolf of the Willows XPA tonight, mate. What are you into?
I've got, I don't know how you pronounce this one. Is it Cupit Craft Brewers? It's a Mosaic Cupid. Session Ale. Cupit?
Yep.
Cupit?
Yeah.
Something
nice.
Like that.
Nice one.
It's actually pretty nice.
Yeah, and that's a good thing with Session Set. I mean, you know, you get your subscription for the month and they send you a different array of craft beers, which is really cool to get into, and you have a taste of a few, work out what you like, what you don't like. So shout out to them, sessionset.com. They've obviously got their subscription packages. They've got a Father's Day package on at the moment. They've also got their Tuesday night happy hours. They've got their comp that they're running, trying to give away 3 months free. So go check that out on their Instagram page as well. That's a pretty easy one to do, and thanks to them for jumping on board. Big one as well. We've got two big ones tonight, Steve. HT at thenetreturn.com.au. So he's just sent me a couple of messages just before we jumped on. He's set up a code for our punters, for our members to jump on and get their own home set up sorted. So obviously a few people are trapped inside, can't get out on the golf course, or just want to have a little home set up where they can hit some balls into a net. So HT's set up a code where everyone that wants to use this code, there's two different options there for the pro version or the home version. They're going to get $150 off the normal price. So there is a code to use. We're going to throw up some links as well. The code is FATHERSGDA. So that's with thenetreturn.com.au. And basically, yeah, till Sunday, Father's Day special only. So you're going to have to get in quick. They're going to do a full giveaway for the $150 off the price. And you're going to get the net, the side barriers, the mat, the sandbags, the lot for those packages. Blake Windred, he's using the pro package at the moment. I've got the home package here, which I'm about to unbox tonight. I'll get those videos up this week so everyone can have a look at it. And then they can jump in there. But good timing for Father's Day to get a net set up, Matt, the works.
Sounds good, mate. I'm looking forward to seeing those videos, mate. I'm a bit jealous.
Yeah, so am I. It's the box is sitting there. I was going to film on the weekend, ran out of time, and I'm pretty pumped to get into it. So I'm going to rip it open tonight and get it started so I can replace my shitty old net that's there as well. So so thanks to thenetreturn.com.au, HD Tran. Also, another one that we've got is Cobra Puma. Cobra Puma have come on board, and they are, we're giving away the Speed Zone Extreme Driver, Steve. Yeah, oh, so we're going to launch that tomorrow. It's going to run for 2 weeks. It's going to be a like, tag, share competition, piece of piss to win, valued over $700. So massive shout out to Cobra Puma. That'll be a great present for someone. They're amazing drivers. So the Speed Zone Extreme, we're going to be giving that away. So keep your ears and eyes out for that one. If you're listening to this in the podcast on Thursday, it's already been out since Tuesday. So jump into the Facebook page and like, share and tag away. Obviously, a shout out to Dint Putters as well, mate. They've got their Father's Day promo at the moment.
Yeah, 10% off their Phoenix putters. So, yeah, if you're needing a new putter, jump on to dintputters.com.au or give your misso a little hint for Father's Day there, and let her know that it's on special at the moment, Dale. And go to dintputters.com.au.
That's it. Awesome. Thanks to those guys. So, yeah, thanks to our sponsors. Obviously, none of this would be possible for them and their support, and looking forward to growing the relationship with those guys and our members as well, because that's what it's all about. It's all about trying to give back to the members and help them out and give them some stuff away. So thanks to them. All right, let's rip in. Big one tonight. I'm going to bring him into the room now and we'll intro him. Jason's had a massive, successful amateur career, as well as extremely impressive results of late in the European tour this year. He won the New South Wales Open in 2017, and we're going to talk about that as well. He's coming off the back of some great results in the recent UK swing over there. So Jason Scrivener, all the way from Spain at the moment, mate. Thanks for joining us.
No problem.
Pleasure's ours. So flew into Spain yesterday. How's it all going there? What's the last week kind of look like over there for you?
Had a week off last week. Didn't play the UK Championship. I played 7 weeks in a row, or 6 weeks in a row, sorry, before that. So it was nice to have a week off in rainy London. And, out here in Spain this week and then Portugal next week.
Yeah, great. And how was traveling going at the moment? How was that flying into Spain today?
Not too bad. Things are fairly normal here. You're wearing a mask and kind of moving on and getting on with things. But, a few different rules. But other than that, fairly normal.
Yeah, I guess I had it penned later to kind of talk about, but I think a lot of the people that are listening now and a lot of the people that are watching are interested to know about the changes that have happened and you know, COVID's still going on, but post the COVID break, what's golf been like for you through the changes?
It's been different. It's just more so the stuff surrounding the tournaments. I mean, a lot of obviously testing every week is quite different. The rules and regulations, the hotel situation, all that sort of stuff's very different. But in terms of once you get on the golf course, there's a few rules and stuff you have to abide by. But other than that, golf's golf, I guess.
Mate, those tests, how many of those tests have you had?
I had one yesterday. So that was probably my seventh or eighth I've had.
Do they get easier?
No. Actually, yesterday was probably the worst. I mean,
was it?
Yeah, it was horrendous. They shove that cotton bud way down your nose, which is pretty uncomfortable.
Steve, you haven't had a test, have you?
No, I haven't. But I've caught Ian Poulter on Instagram a few times, and it just doesn't look friendly at all. Does it feel as bad as what it looks on Poulter's?
Probably worse. Yeah. Instagram? The throat's okay. They do the throat first and then the nose. It just feels like it's going halfway up your brain, which is pretty uncomfortable.
Yeah,
I guess it's crazy. I guess it's what you've got to do now, and it's, I guess, become part of the norm for you and in your career and your line of work, which is, you know, it's an interesting thing. We'll probably delve more into, you know, post-golf and what's happening at the moment later on, but we're going to do a little ice-breaking segment now, a little quick-fire par five questions to reach the hole. So just five random questions. Here we go. Do you play metres or yards?
Metres.
Have you wanted to go to yards or ever had the interest of that?
No real need to be honest, because every week we got you get to choose the yards or meters book. So no real need to.
Cool, I like it. 7-iron carry distance, no wind.
155 meters.
Nice.
That's a standard 7-iron.
Good number. Favorite movie?
Favorite movie, probably Caddyshack.
Caddyshack.
Love it.
Nice one. I think what was James last week was Happy Gilmore. So I see a bit of a theme going here.
Between Caddyshack and Happy Gilmore.
first tee box, you're standing over the ball. What are you thinking?
Some random thoughts sometimes, but hard to pick one, but a lot of different thoughts, that's for sure.
Yeah. And how many hole in ones have you had?
Seven. All up.
Oh,
yeah.
That hurts. When was the most recent?
Never won a car. I've actually had I've had five on tour. Never won anything.
Wow. Never been a car on the box for you.
Bottle of champagne. That was it.
Bottle of champers spewing. The caddy be spewing as well, isn't there? Some kind of deal sometimes with the caddies and the prizes.
Yeah, there's a few events out here where I think one in Denmark. I came really close. I looked out and the caddy would have got a. Golf cart, and I would have got some flash golf cart as well. So yeah, he was spewing.
Alrighty, let's jump back to, I guess, you coming over to Australia. You're born in South Africa, that's right.
Yep.
And so coming over to Australia when you were 10.
Yeah. So was born in Cape Town, lived there till I was 5, and then moved to Zimbabwe. Lived in Zimbabwe till I was 10, and then moved to Perth. My parents wanted a better future for us, and moved to Perth. Been there ever since.
Yeah. Okay. Where was home in Perth?
Down in Mandurah. So as soon as we moved to Australia, we went straight down to Mandurah, which is an hour south of Perth.
Yeah.
Been there, still live there, and love it there.
And were you hitting balls before you came over?
Yeah, so I started playing when I was 8 in Zimbabwe.
Yep.
Started playing with my dad around there, and then once we moved to Australia, got straight into it and joined a golf club and got hooked.
So where was the home course in Australia? Yeah, it was Mandurah.
Yeah.
And what age did you know that you wanted to, I guess, take golf seriously, or that you knew that you're a decent golfer?
That's a good question. Probably I broke par when I was 12, nearly 13, I think. Shot one under, I think it was a par, one of those plus par things. And that was when I started to see some really big improvements when I was 12 or 13. And just got hooked on it. I used to play a bit of cricket and other sports, a bit of tennis, and then just quit those other sports and focused on golf, and was hooked.
Was there someone that kind of took you under their wing and guided you through that process at a young age?
I always played a lot with my dad from the age of maybe 8 till 12, and then once I joined Mandurah Country Club, the pro there, Gary Calhoun, was a big help to me and a mentor, and he's done a great job with junior programs at Mandurah, and it was a huge help to me.
And then you won the Australian Boys Amateur in 2007, top 30 world amateur golf ranking at the time. Tell us about 2007 and winning the Boys Amateur.
Yeah, that was huge for me. I think I was always I kind of progressed nicely and was doing well as a junior and hadn't really won a lot. I think I'd finished runner up a bunch of times, and that was kind of the tournament that helped me kickstart the last year as a junior, and I won the Australian Junior Masters maybe a couple of months after that, and that got me into the Australian Open and the Australian Masters as a junior. So those wins are huge for me, and just to have the learning experience of those two pro events at a young age was really big for me.
So then, leading up to turning pro, you win the 2009 West Australian Amateur. You then competed in the 2010 US Amateur and turned pro later that year. Sounds like a great few years there. Tell us about the time, those few years and the experience of turning pro. Was it a foregone conclusion that that's what was going to happen, or was there a time where you had to go, I've got to go all in, I'm just going to go for it?
Yeah, I probably didn't have the results that I would have liked as an amateur. I had really obviously won a few junior events and was heading in the right direction. And it's not that I didn't have a decent amateur career. I just probably didn't live up to my own expectations. So, I think it was either continue with the amateur career and try and really dominate and win everything, or turn pro and start from the bottom and work my way up. And I'm glad I dove into the deep end somewhat and started from the bottom as a pro and kind of worked my way up the ranks ever since.
Because you're only 21 years old at the time in turning pro. Had you gone through sort of any partying phase leading up to that, or you just sort of that was it?
Not a huge partying phase, but I mean, you obviously, I think you enjoy yourself as you go along, and I never felt like I missed out on a lot. Obviously, those years are important, 18 to kind of 21, 22, where you do miss out on a lot, but I always enjoyed what I did and traveled, and I was dedicated, but had a good time as well. So,
nice. So jumping on from there, you qualify for 4 tour cards in 2013. I was reading this today, and I was how do you qualify for 4 tour cards at that time? Can you tell us how you managed to do that?
So I got my Aussie tour card, and then. So I wasn't playing great in Australia, wasn't doing anything great. And then I went over to Canada, got my Canadian tour card.
Yep.
Because that filled in a gap in the middle part of the year for us.
Right.
Just so I, over the winter back in Australia, I could go play some four-round events and get some experience. So I did that. And then what else did I do? Oh, I went to, I think, the One Asia tour.
One Asia, yep.
Yeah, some status on the One Asia tour. So that looked like it was going to turn into something quite big, and it looked like a good opportunity. So got some status there. And then the following year, yeah, went to European tour school, didn't quite get full status, but had some conditional challenge tour status. So that was it was a bit tricky to kind of work out what to do and where to go. But
Well, that's my next question I'm leading into. I read that Jared Mosley was as an influence on you kind of going over to Europe. How much did he kind of influence you there, and how did you come to the decision, I guess, to target a bit of a career over there?
Yeah, I think growing up as Jared was at Mandurah as well, and he was kind of the superstar and the king at Mandurah, to speak of. I always looked up to him, and he was a bit of a benchmark for me. So seeing what he did and the path he went on was a big influence on me. And I think I went to Canada, did that part and learnt a lot. And then I actually went to USQ school early on in my career as well. That didn't work out. I just felt like Europe was a great tour for me to start off and learn from some of the best players in the world. And I'm really glad I went down that path.
Do you still feel that way? Do you still feel that the European style of golf here suits your game better than the US, or do you think does it make a difference to you at this age?
I don't think so. I think if you're good enough, you're on the European tour, you can compete on the US tour as well. I think people talk about a game being suited to the US tour or the European tour. I don't really see it that way. Obviously, in America, the courses are slightly different. We probably play a wider range of courses in Europe and have to adapt a bit more. But I think you see all sorts of players in America succeeding, and I don't necessarily see it that way, but I just see it as Europe's a great path if you're going to take your time and get to America that way.
Yeah, so you said you went to USQ school. You found, how did you go? Like, how did you find that experience?
Tough, straight up. Yeah. I think I missed it. I had to do the pre-qualifying for the first stage, and I missed it first stage. But I was very raw, have a lot of experience.
What year was that?
I think that was 2010, end of 2010, maybe.
Yep.
It was good learning.
So just after you've turned pro, you played the USM over there, then tried to do Q school over there.
Yeah, right. So I played a lot of golf over there, and I just thought I'd give it a go. And then after that, I think they changed the rule to no Q school, straight onto the PGA Tour. So I decided to go to Europe the next couple of years.
Yeah, awesome. And then I guess jumping a little bit further, because I want to talk about this, your win, your first win to this date, your only win, the professional win that you've had. So obviously that was a massive moment for you. New South Wales Open, you end up beating Lucas Herbert by 6 strokes, I think, in the end at Twin Creeks. 7-under in the final round. That must have been a really good moment for you to get that.
Yeah, for sure. I'd just come off a decent year in Europe, kept my card, so was trending in the right direction. Went to New South Wales, and the game was feeling good. And it was actually a lot I think I won by 6, but it was a lot tighter than that, and Lucas pushed me right to the end. So that was really good to perform and win under the pressure and get that first win.
Yeah, there was somebody in our comments earlier this week, Ray Scafidi, said he followed you at the 2017 New South Wales Open, and he said it was a birdie-inspired victory, a very impressive. So pretty cool that Ray remembers that and was out there at Twin Creeks following you around.
Yeah, very cool.
I said there that it was your only win, and I felt bad when I said, I mentioned that it was your only win. I feel like Jason Scrivener is a name that we hear so much, and you're always up there and about there, and we're going to go through the last couple of years and how much success you've had, and you've been so close so many times and been in the hunt. do you feel like you should have had more, I guess, wins on tour?
Yeah, for sure.
I know that hurts, and I'm sorry asking it that way. It baffled me, I guess, when I realized you'd only had one win.
Yeah, it's frustrating, but at the same time, I think it's just it's a difficult sport to win. Yeah, I think it took me a while as a junior to win as well, and then once I won a few times, and the same as an amateur. So I think I'm a slow learner, but hopefully once I get that first win out here, it'll come. It'll open up the doors to a few more. And it is frustrating, but at the same time, it's just not a sport you can be impatient and expect to win all the time. So
I guess it's just.
Sorry. 2017 is not that long ago, really, and 2020, if we want to really call it out, it's a write-off almost to a degree. But you know, in the last year, 2019 was a huge year for you. You get down to 125th in world rankings. You had several top tens. You finished the race in Dubai. To Dubai in 32nd, with over €1 million in prize money. To mention a few, you know, you've got the Omega Dubai Classic or Desert Classic, tied 7th. ISPS Hand of Vic Open, tied 5th. Open to Spania, tied 7th. Nedbank Golf Challenge, hosted by Gary Player, tied 3rd. So really close there. And the World Tour Championship of Dubai, tied 10th. So that's just to name, you know, a few of the ones that you came top 10 in just in last year. So yeah, tell us about that ride for you in the last year.
Yeah, so I made a few changes to what I was doing at the end of 2018. New coach, started working with a new mental coach as well, and kind of just put some systems in place and a bit more structure to what I was doing. So that really helped, and just I don't think I played necessarily a hell of a lot. I didn't change a lot about my game, but just the way I went about things changed a little bit, and that made a huge difference over the whole year. And obviously it was a really solid year, but it was a bit disappointing not to get a win. I feel like I've continued off from last year with the consistency. I've just got to take advantage of my good weeks a bit more.
You mentioned there you got a mental performance coach back in about 2018. How much of an importance do you place that on your game? You know, if you're looking at those sort of finishes, how much of an importance do you put on that?
A big part of it. I think just doing that and then putting some structure into what I was doing, the way I worked with my caddy, the way I was working just with everyone in my team, changed a bit for the better. And I think it's underestimated what those little changes can do over a whole year. And so that was super important for me.
2020, so we have that great year 2019 results wise and money wise. It's not bad to win over €1 million in a year. You take that. 2020, COVID happens, and what impact does that have on you, that time off golf? I mean, how much time did you have off from, you know, tournament to tournament?
It was actually pretty good timing for me, I think. I didn't really have a decent break over the Christmas last year. Got married, so that was crazy as well, and then straight back into 2020. So sometimes the years roll on for us. You know, we finish in like November, you come back, play in Australia over the summer, and then all of a sudden we're back in Abu Dhabi in January. So it feels like it's continuous and you never really get a break. So it was actually really nice just to put away the clubs. I didn't touch a club for 2 months, and just nice to be at home in Australia, which was good. But then coming back, it's, you know, the first few weeks I was very rusty, and it's taken me a while to get it back into the full rhythm of it. But I'll never have another break like that probably the rest of my career. So it was nice just to reset and get back into
it. And I guess you just said that you've gone like however many tournaments. How many tournaments have you just gone in a row before this week's break? Yeah. So I guess you're somebody that I guess doesn't get to have those breaks. So you get to have that refresh and take the mind off, I guess, and reset. And obviously you did reset because you've come back and you've had some great results this season. You've been happy with your return to form?
Yeah, it's been solid. I put a lot of work in leading up to the Memorial, which was my first event back. That was a big opportunity. It was very rusty, I think competitively rusty. And the work that I put in didn't really show until maybe another 3 weeks or 2 weeks after the Memorial. So, I think it's hard to all of a sudden step back into the competitive mode and expect to be sharp. But, it's been a solid restart, and looking forward to the next couple of months.
So the Memorial happens. You go and play over the Memorial. Where are you flying from and to get into the States at that time?
So I flew from Perth through Qatar to the States.
Yep. So how was that experience, I guess, just traveling out of Australia during those times?
A bit of an eye-opener, I think, to how things were different. All the hostesses were wearing PPE head to toe. Very different. But, once we got to the States, things were relatively normal.
Yeah, one of our co-hosts, Amy Walsh, on our podcast, she's just flown over to play back in the LET, and she sent us a photo, and, you know, she's got the face shield on as well as the mask underneath. And I was just like, what a bizarre time to kind of travel. And I guess it's something you look back on and you talk about, this once-in-a-lifetime thing that, you know, we had to travel with masks on and everything else. I hope that is what it is in the end.
Hopefully, yeah. Yeah.
So the Memorial, you'll go over there for the Memorial. Tell us about that weekend. Obviously, it's a pretty high-profile event over there. They played on the course the week before and then just turned it into a brute the week after.
Mm. Yeah, brutal. Great golf course, really fair test, but brutal at the same time. Great opportunity for me. It was a good learning experience. I think any time you can play on the PGA Tour and those big events is a great learning curve. So it gave me a taste of what I'd like to do a bit more and didn't go the way I would have planned, but yeah, definitely a lot of experience taken from it.
Looks like a pure course. I was seeing a video today of one of your videos on Instagram hitting it, you know, the fairway of the 18th, and someone said, why are you hitting off the green for? Because it looked that pure there. Was that what it was like? I guess it was nice on the fairway, but as soon as you got off it, it was a different story.
Yeah, pretty impressive golf course. And then they ripped it up on the Monday after the tournament.
Well, they were ripping it up on the Sunday, I think, as soon as they were finishing on the holes. They were showing on the 18th that they'll start to tear it apart already. It's just,
I think they've got too much money over there. I don't know what to do with it. Amazing facility and golf course, and I wouldn't mind playing there every day.
Yeah, definitely. And is that, I guess, something that you aspire to? Do you want to get your US card and play on the US tour?
Ultimately, that's the goal. I've got a ways to go to get there, but that's ultimately where I'd like to play for sure.
Yep. Your last three results have been pretty impressive. We've got a T14, T14, T8, English Championship, the Celtic and the Wales Open. Tell us about that run you've had in the last couple of tourneys.
Yeah, it's been solid. I put myself in position a couple of times, just didn't really capitalize on it. The game's trending in the right direction. It's been a bit different. I've had my wife on the bag the last 5 weeks, so that's been interesting.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, that's been fun. So she's caddying for me for the next couple of weeks, and then I'll get a caddy for the rest of the year. But it's been good fun, and just nice to be back playing consistently.
Is she a golfer?
No, she doesn't know much about golf at all, which is kind of nice. I'm doing everything, doing all my yardages. And
I was going to say, she's stepping off the yardage for you?
No. She's learned that she's gone along. She's, filling in the divots every once in a while and raking the bunkers, but that's about it.
And would you call this your honeymoon?
Sorry?
Would you call this your honeymoon then? Like spending time together after getting married earlier in the year?
Not a proper honeymoon because of COVID.
Are you going easy with the bag and, you know, not making her carry the staff bag around all loaded up, are you?
She's had the carry bag, so, yeah.
Okay.
Nice boss.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess that
20 bottles of water in it. And
yeah. And so yeah, I mean, that's obviously a different thing for you to have the wife on the bag, and you found that a good experience just to kind of, I guess, be a bit relaxed at times, and she obviously helps you with that. I mean, your results speak for themselves.
Yeah, I think, look, it's not a perfect situation, but it's we've made it work, and it's been fun along the way to do something different. And I think we're so structured and rigid in what we normally do on tour that it's kind of nice just to mix it up and do something different.
Has it happened because of the COVID bubble? Is that the reason? Is it just been easier that way, or is
My usual caddy couldn't do it anyway because he's just had his second child back home, and obviously he's from Perth as well. So the kind of the rules and regulations of getting in and out of Australia is really, really tricky at the moment. So it doesn't make a lot of sense for him to come over, especially with a family. I mean, he would have to hotel quarantine going home, and so he did the memorial caddy there and then went home and quarantined for 2 weeks. And yeah, I can't really ask him to come over and do it again.
How does it work just on the prize money side of things? How do you have that conversation? Do you not tell her how much you win and give her 10%? Yeah, no,
I said I'm trying to negotiate my pay rather than negotiate her pay.
Exactly. She's taking 100%, Steve. That's what I'm saying.
Chase might get 10%. 90, 10 the other way around. She gets 90, you get 10. That's your pocket money.
Yep.
Oh, I love it. That's gold.
Do you stick around at the moment after the tournaments in that bubble? So on, you know, your fourth round when you finished, or I guess the Wales Open, do you stick around and watch the 18th as they come down?
No. No, I probably should, but no, I think the last thing you want to do is hang around really after a tournament. You kind of want to get on, and unless one of your mates is going to win.
Right.
Usually just get on with it and kind of, especially if once you can leave the bubble, you just want to get out of it.
Yeah. I just had this flashback of the Wales Open and Soderberg needing, you know, on the last hole and just dunking it in the water or rolling it back in the water, making triple or whatever he made, and then misses out on the US Open as well. And they showed a few of the players there around, and I was interested if you were there still watching.
No, I didn't know. Interesting one to watch though. That was
So a quick question here. Did you just miss out on a spot at the US Open based on the points from the UK swing order of merit?
How did that work?
How it was? Yeah.
Yeah, I think I was close. I needed a top five in the second Celtic Manor event. I finished tied eighth. So it just missed out, which is one of the goals for sure going into that 5 week stretch. Just didn't capitalize on those good weeks enough and just missed out.
But you did play in the US Open in 2018. That must have been an incredible experience. You know, Shinnecock was brutal.
Yeah.
Tell us about that. Give us some insights.
Yeah, it was a bit of a, looking back, it's a bit of a turning point for me as well, because huge opportunity to get in there and first major, first professional event in the States. So it was a big opportunity, but I played great. I got off to a really bad start on the first day. I think it was 8 over through 10 holes and finished 8 over for the day. So I played really well after the start, and then played great the second round and doubled the last hole to miss by a shot. So that was probably the lowest point of my career after that round. So it was a bit of a tough one, because it was definitely a highlight the week, but it was at the same time, it was a really tough pill to swallow. But you know, I continued after that. It turned my year around, and I played, kind of had a really good finish to that year. And I've learned a lot from that for sure.
Is the experience over there, the US Open, and I guess playing in like the Memorial and that, is the overall experience as a professional golfer incredible? I mean, we hear about how well you kind of treated and stuff over there at the US Open and everything else. Do you see that over there?
Yeah, I think I mean, I can't complain. In Europe, we get treated really well. But things are just that next level up in America. Just little things. But it's, yeah, for sure, I think everyone wants to be there and play there because life is pretty easy if you can play in those big events week in, week out. So, yeah, it's great. Anytime I can get the opportunity to play over there, I'll definitely grab it and hopefully I can get over there a bit more.
Had you played Shinnecock previous to that?
No, that was the first time. First time I played it. Pretty brutal.
Yeah, it looked brutal. I mean, what Koepka did to it was pretty amazing, but it was, I guess that's what US Opens are known for now, isn't it? It's how brutal can they make the course. And
I think it was, that was the only one I've played, and to me that was a fairly, it was a good, fair setup. I think over the weekend it got a little bit trickier, but I think I enjoy playing tests like that, and I think we don't have to do it every week, but I think it's great to watch as well.
What's the access like in the week leading up to Thursday and day one playing? You know, what do you get to do through those sort of events in terms of majors around the course, practice sessions, all that sort of stuff? What's that experience like?
I think it's not too different to a regular tour event, to be honest. Obviously, like the one at Shinnecock, the crowds are huge and New York fans are nuts. I mean, on a Monday, you've got the crowd watching you during a practice round. So you've got to manage the excitement and the whole vibe around the week and not try not to do too much as well. Because, I mean, for me, it was my first major. I wanted to enjoy it and take it all in. But at the same time, you want to be ready for Thursday and not.
There's a job to do.
A lot of people overdo it and they're exhausted come Thursday. But yeah, that was a pretty cool experience. I played practice rounds with Jason Day, Adam Scott. So that was great to have their support and learned a lot from the week.
Now, you mentioned quickly there about crowds, and I have heard how crazy New York crowds are and Boston and that kind of East Coast there. This US Open is going to be completely different, and we spoke a little bit before we jumped in about crowds and if you're missing the crowds or not. Tell our listeners about what it's like to play at the moment with no crowds around.
I mean, unless I'm in the last couple of groups, I haven't got too many fans following me around. But I think especially when you're in the last couple of groups of a tournament, or probably those big players in the States, it's taken them a bit of adjusting. And I think it's just a bit different, just the whole atmosphere of a tournament and the vibe. Trying to win a tournament would be very different. So not too different for me, but I could imagine those top players, it's quite unusual.
Well, here's a question. If you got paired up with Tiger Woods at the moment, would you rather it be no crowds or crowds?
Crowds, probably.
Just to
experience it.
Yep.
I think that's the whole it's probably a huge part of Tiger's intimidation factor as well, is the fact that there are so many people and everyone's rushing around trying to get a good view. And I think that would be a pretty cool experience to play with him with huge crowds as well.
Yeah, well, they talk about that advantage that he has with the crowds, and it turns into a, you know, two-stroke advantage sometimes because people aren't used to it. So it would be very surreal, I guess, playing with him. And finally, you hear about this, you know, playing with Tiger Woods and there's just nobody there. I mean, I'm sure there's still a number of people that are following him, but nothing like. And, you know, I know you said there's not many people that would follow yourself around, but I'm sure like something like the Memorial, there's crowds there no matter what.
Yeah, like at the Memorial, we are my caddy and I were just on the putting green after the first round doing some practice, and Tiger's group rocked up and teed off the 10th, and it's like a ghost town, nobody around. Yeah. And we were like, wow, this would be an absolute zoo if crowds were allowed. Weird just to get your head around it.
And I know you take a win no matter what, but wouldn't you rather the win be where a crowd's there?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Definitely. Especially, I mean, you look at today with Rahm and the putts that him and DJ met and made, and then you look at JT and Morikawa making them. Yeah. You know, it's so different.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, the crowds would have loved those finishes.
Yeah, they're big moments in the game of golf that would have gone down in history and probably might still, but it's going to be silent. And you're going to put that next to all of, you know, Tiger's moments, all those other moments that have got the crowd just going nuts behind it. It's going to be very interesting to see how we look back on those moments as we go forward.
Yeah, hopefully we can have them back soon.
Yeah, yeah. Steve, you want to ask this question?
Oh, cool. A couple of cool little questions just to sort of get off the tour topics, but favorite go-to shot?
Knowing where you're shopping as well.
I'm not a chopper. favorite shot? It's just if there's a standard easy pin, no wind at all, like a standard 7-iron is to flush a 7, like a mid-iron for me, that's one of the biggest rushes.
Straight at it,
or do you like to give it a bit of shape?
A little drop fade would be the ultimate, I think, for me.
Yeah. Yeah, nice. And what about a shot that you'd love to have over again?
Oh, shot. That's a good question.
Have there been any of those?
There's probably a few.
Trying to pick one is the hard thing.
Yeah, Bank last year, the 16th, I was kind of in contention, and I airmailed the green and ended up making bogey. And if I'd maybe made birdie there, I could have been right in the mix. But
A bit of a swing.
I overrode my caddy and took the wrong club and should have listened.
Jason, side note to the questions, I just thought about, do you enjoy coming back to Australia and playing the Australian Open and playing the PGA? Is it something that is, straight away on your calendar each year?
Yeah, 100%. Love it. We're even talking to my wife yesterday about it, and just those events are so much fun. Just to be back in Australia, in front of Australian crowds as well, is a big thrill too. So it doesn't happen enough, but anytime the opportunity comes up, I'll jump at it.
Yeah, it's quite devastating, I guess, at the moment. You know, it doesn't look like there's going to be much golf around.
No, it's not looking good. But yeah, hopefully next year everything the schedule can pop back up and can make it work out.
Yep. Superstitions, do you have any on the course? Do you have three T's in the backside and the 1986 penny in the right?
No, not really. I just get on with it, really. I like to fight superstitions, to be honest. As soon as I kind of feel like I'm creating one, I'll try and break it on purpose.
And that's not the first time we've heard that answer. I think it must be a thing that most golfers get probably taught early on is try not to have them, because they probably just take you down a bit of a rabbit hole.
Yeah, this game can drive you nuts, so I try not to let it.
Have you got a pretty stringent routine when you're, pre-shot?
Pretty structured routine in terms of pre-shot routine. But again, I don't like to be too rigid in what I do. I like to kind of stay flexible somewhat.
Yeah, awesome.
We've got a question come through from one of our listeners here, from Kathy Gary. Your golf would speak for itself, but what is a personal quality you'd want a crowd to notice about you?
It's an interesting question.
I think it's one of those sports where it's quite hard for people to get to know you through the TV or while watching you, because you are so focused on what you're doing. I just think if you handle yourself and treat everyone with some respect, that should show people what sort of character you are.
Nice. You ever thrown a club, Jace?
I definitely have.
In your professional career?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
For sure. Can't remember the last time I've done it, but
yeah. It wasn't like Terry Pilgadaris, but it wasn't caught on camera at the Indian Open and went viral.
That was a pretty good one.
Yeah, you launched that putter. Yeah, that's right. Mate, what's the plans from here? What does the rest of 2020 look like?
So just going to keep playing in Europe, try and improve my world ranking, and try have a good finish in the race to Dubai. There's a bit of uncertainty with the schedule. I think we've got a schedule set in place till like early November, and then that kind of just letting us know every few weeks what the updates are. So hopefully just keep contending, and I'd like to get a win obviously at some point, just have a good finish in the race to Dubai, and I think for me just to get my world ranking down as low as possible is a big goal.
Do you know what is your status at the moment with the race to Dubai?
In the about 85th on the race to Dubai, so I think 60 make it this year to the final, the DP World. So obviously that's your first goal at the start of the year is to get to that final event. Just try keep improving and improve that world ranking.
And you made that last year. You qualified for that last year. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, you tied 10th in that one, was it?
DP yeah, World Championship. Yeah, had a good final round and finished 10th. So that was a nice finish to the year.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, awesome. Well, mate, Steve, you got anything else to add?
I was just going to ask one more question just around, you talked a little bit earlier around your aspiration for the US tour. When do you think that's going to be a transition for you? Is that something sort of in the next 5 years, do you think, is something that you'll aspire to?
Hopefully sooner rather than later. I think it's tricky now that you can't go through the US Q school and get straight onto the tour. So for me, I've got to pretty much do it through my world ranking, try to get that down by the top 60 or 50, get into some of the world golf championships, into the majors, and play well in those ones. So you do see your guys from the European tour do it. Eric Van Roon did it this year. Yeah. He's full status next year. A bunch of guys have done it in the past where if you play well in Europe, you'll get your world ranking down and open up some doors. But until I can get that world ranking down, I don't think it's worth me giving up my status in Europe to go play the Korn Ferry Tour. So
yeah, gotcha.
Yeah, just keep working away here in Europe and hopefully get over there.
Do you catch up with the Aussies over there? Do you hang out with the fellow Aussie golfers?
Yeah, we're a pretty tight-knit group here. We've got a bunch of young guys here as well this year, so that's really good. We've got Minwoo. Murray, Maverick, Jake, McLeod.
Yep.
And then, obviously Wade also.
Hendy, he's pretty young.
Hendy. Hendy, Wade. Who else? So we've got a good group of Aussies.
Good crew.
Yeah, so it's good fun. And everyone's in the same boat here. Everyone's missing home at the moment, and we don't know when we'll go home. So it's always good to have their support.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we appreciate your time tonight, mate. We understand what it's like, and it's great to talk to you and find out what it's like just, being in amongst it over there and traveling the world at the moment. A lot of us can't even imagine, I guess, traveling out of some of us can't travel out of our house, let alone, talking to you and going through that over there. So we really thank you for your time tonight, mate.
No problem. Anytime.
And wish you the best going forward and can't wait to, see you break through for a few more of those dubs, mate.
Hopefully, yeah. Thanks, guys.
Definitely. All right.
Thanks, Jace.
Cheers. Awesome, Steve.
That was cool. It's really cool just to pick the brain as well, just in some of those experiences, just to get to understand how your mind works through those. And he's had so many, top tens in recent time. It's only a matter of time before the next dub comes up for him. So,
100%.
Really looking forward to seeing, just looking forward to following him further. When we get some more regular golf happening.
Yeah, I mean, he's had a killer of a year this year and great form last year as well. So I really think it is one of those things that once he breaks through and gets that win overseas that we're going to see a lot more of him and hopefully we do because, great bloke and it was awesome talking tonight and I guess a lot of us wish we were in the same shoes as Jason Scribner and playing golf overseas.
€1 million in prize money in the 1 year. Yeah, definitely wish we were in that same position. But it's a lot of hard work and grit to get to that stage as well. So yeah, not discounting that at all. It's a monumental effort to get down to what 125th in the world, sitting at 180th at the moment. But yeah, like we said before, it's only a matter of time before that next breakthrough happens.
Definitely. And if he wants a caddy that's going to take less than his wife, I'll throw my hand up and come over there as well. So I reckon I'd be a little bit cheaper. So, awesome one tonight, mate. Thanks to those guys that are online viewing us on Facebook tonight. We know it's a different night from normal. Apologise if you listen to us on Thursday and you jumped on a Tuesday to watch, but it worked out tonight and we weren't going to say no to having a chat to Jason. So thanks for joining us tonight. Hopefully you're listening as well on the podcast. And I guess the last thing is HT Tran again with that netreturn.com.au, those specials.
Yeah, that's a big one.
That's a big one, $150 off those packages. The code's going to go up on our Facebook page, so you'll be able to see that. And it's only the first 50 customers or till Sunday at midnight, okay? So they're low in stock again at the moment. They've been getting hammered. Obviously, everyone wants to be hitting balls at home. It's a great setup, so check that one out. So, and Cobra Puma, we're going to give that driver away. I can't wait to give it away to somebody that is going to start crushing those white pills all over the course with it, straight down the middle.
Straight we need some videos there from the winner on their first few drives with it. It would be great definitely to just see that experience from them.
Yeah.
Over, what was it, $700 worth?
Yeah, mate. Yeah, retail's over $700. Cool. So, it's a good piece of equipment, that one. And we were lucky to hit the speed zones a few weeks ago and can highly recommend.
Very good.
Awesome. All right, guys, thanks for joining us tonight. Hopefully we'll see you next Tuesday, but it might be changed to a Monday or a Sunday. Just stay tuned and we'll see how we go. But, exciting. We've got some cool interviews coming up and we just can't let the cat out of the bag just yet. But unless you want to, Steve-O, or do we hold off?
No, I think we hold off on this one for a few days. All right,
this one's a good one. It's a bit out of left field, this one, but I think everyone's going to enjoy it. So
yeah, controversial public figure. Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking forward to getting stuck into an interview with him. It's going to be fun.
Definitely, definitely. All right, guys, thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you next time.
We're three golf tragics. We're weekend packers, and we love that's to right. go to golf. And I think that
I showed you guys that on the weekend.
Yes, you did. We'll get to that shortly.